And 107.5 FM, W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Trump's threatening to put massive tariffs on dairy products and lumber goods from Canada as soon as tomorrow. And while Trump has said it was reciprocal for tariffs imposed by Canada on U.S. goods, his top economic aide, Kevin Hassett, giving a different reason today on ABC's This Week.
What happened was that we launched a drug war, not a trade war, and it was part of a negotiation to get Canada and Mexico to stop shipping fentanyl across our borders.
Another potential government shutdown looms. Speaker Johnson's latest short-term spending bill can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote already. At least two have said they're a no. It's been 60 years since Bloody Sunday, when police in Alabama beat protesters in Selma. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries was there today.
We stand on the shoulders of those giants right now, still having to carry a heavy burden to perfect our country and perfect our democracy.
This is ABC News. Day 24 of Pope Francis' hospital stay at St. Peter's Square, mass carrying on without him today. ABC's Tom Sophie Borridge is in Vatican City.
It's nearly a week now since we've had any news from the Vatican about bouts of acute breathing difficulty, which the Pope previously suffered from. Vatican sources saying the Pope's doctors are seeing several indicators moving in a positive direction, but they want to see other indicators also move in a positive direction before the Pope's doctors change his overall prognosis. So for now, the Vatican's saying his overall prognosis is guarded.
The U.S. Justice Department in the early stages of investigating the country's largest egg producers for what some are alleging is a coordinated effort to restrict supply and inflate prices. The Secret Service says it shot a suicidal man near the White House this weekend. The agency says the man may have traveled from Indiana to Washington and was shot by agents when he brandished a weapon. The man's condition unknown. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Hey, fellow Gen Xers, it's Elizabeth Banks. Big news! The recommended age for pneumococcal pneumonia vaccination has been lowered to 50 and older, even if you're healthy. It's up to us to lead the charge. After all, we gave the world the internet. We're trailblazers. Let's lead the way again, because we are at over 6 times greater risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Gen X, this is our shot. Head to VaxAssist.com and schedule today. That's VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this Civic Media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. There's a new federal approach to handling bird flu. Mike Moen reports.
Last week, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins released a 5-pronged strategy and $1 billion investment to keep avian flu in check and reduce rising egg prices. The new measures focus largely on fixing on-farm biosecurity gaps, as well as push for a new poultry vaccine. Megan Davis with Johns Hopkins University says it's encouraging, but she worries about the lack of specifics in pivoting away from current methods of handling infected birds where farmers depopulate their flocks.
Our current quarantine and stamping out policy has been in place for quite some time. There's a reason it exists. These birds get really sick, so their animal welfare issues are not going to recover.
The federal move comes at a chaotic time for avian flu response. Under the Trump administration's federal spending crackdown, several key bird flu workers were fired by the USDA, and the department is now struggling to rehire them. Davis says the U.S. lags behind other countries with collaborative teams of experts to holistically assess outbreaks. She warns a patchwork investment won't make up for huge federal workforce losses of key researchers.
I have major concerns moving forward that we will not have good eyes on this virus, and that if it would, heaven forbid, start to really develop a human-to-human transmission chain, then that's a huge step down that path towards pandemic.
In the past 30 days alone, the virus has infected more than 107 flocks nationally, affecting nearly 13 million birds, that according to the USDA. So far, 70 people have been infected and one person has died from avian flu in the U.S.
That's Mike Moen reporting, and I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and lows in the low 30s. Sunshine, 66 for Monday. Winds will be out of the south, up to 25 miles per hour. Winds increase to 35 miles per hour Monday night with a low near 25. Sunny and 41 on Tuesday. Currently, 53 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Joining us next time, we'll take a look back at the news of the weekend and also discuss Ukraine. Why what's happening there matters here in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. First up, we go to the Todd Albaugh Show. And this week, Todd welcomed on Trigvi Olson of the Lincoln Project, who stuck around a little later than usual to talk about some new research from the Lincoln Democracy Institute. Going far beyond a typical poll, they asked people questions not only about what they think, but why they think it. The results can teach us a lot about connecting with our neighbors and having difficult discussions.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. Todd Albaugh, along with engineer and producer Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It is 6 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome into hour number 2 of the big program here. It is Wednesday, March 5th, 2025. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite, and it is
Pump Day.
There you go. The old camel. 7 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. Trigvi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, a River Falls native, great hockey player, has stuck. Also a Green Bay Packer owner.
Has stuck around
for the second half, the hour number 2 here of the program, and we appreciate that because we're going to play what's worse a little bit later on here this half hour. Timely indeed, having to do with roads and people. They can both be slippery. What's worse? We'll talk about that in a little while. But right now, Trigvi, you came back, and I appreciate this because this is really great. We talk about the Lincoln Project a lot, but there's an offshoot called the Lincoln Democracy Institute. And I want you to explain a little bit your involvement with that. And you have some new research, and you're so very kind as to debut this on our show. And I think it's really important stuff for us to understand one another and understand how we talk to each other as Wisconsinites.
Yeah, so the Lincoln Democracy Institute is our 501c4, which means it's less political. They don't do ads. What we do with Lincoln Democracy Institute is really focus on what are the things that we can do to protect and defend democracy? And we do a lot of research. And in the course of doing our research, we came to an understanding that, quite frankly, we need to not just do political research, but we really need to look into what's happening at the individual level and why people are making choices that are antithetical to democracy and maybe antithetical to who they are in their daily lives. And so what we did is we put together panel research. And what panel research is, in the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Arizona, across all of them, we've recruited 4,000 people. 1,000 of them are in Wisconsin. And we have, for the last year, been having conversations with them, giving them surveys, having them having them take different tests so we know what their personality traits are, what their values are, what roles they play, do they have kids, trying to understand and work with these people who have all volunteered to be a part of this and receive some compensation when they're helping us out, really understand who they are. And it's a great project. And one of the things that we just released today is a PowerPoint, and Todd, we can push it out via social media, I think. People can go and look at it. It's on the fears. We asked people about 40 fears, and we would say to the respondents, Todd, on a scale of 0, not afraid at all, to 100, how afraid are you of an economic depression in your lifetime? Mm-hmm. And you would answer. And then we'd say, Todd, how afraid are you of a nuclear war happening in your lifetime? How afraid are you of traditional American values being replaced, or climate change, or whatever? We've gone through and looked at all of those fears, and we work with a lot of academics on this. And there are 5 kinds of fears that when you encounter people, they're going to be one of 5 kinds of people in terms of their fears. They may be institutionally skeptical, i.e. they're worried about government, you know, wasting their money, or, you know, institutions failing. High anxiety generalists, who tend to be afraid of lots of different things. Political chaos warriors, people who are worried about democracy and it failing. Economic security seekers, and the future shocked. And that's people who are worried about what the future looks like, things like AI. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about each of these groups, when you're talking to somebody, if you meet somebody who talks a lot about being afraid of America's future, immigration, traditional values being replaced, you're probably talking to an institutional skeptic. Now, they are far more likely to be Trump voters, about 70%, right? Mm-hmm. The kinds of things that you need to, when you're talking to them, and the kinds of questions that you need to be asking them, need to focus on the fact that you know that they have a high level of distrust and suspicion about others. So you need to make it about individuals that they know that might be different, right? Mm-hmm. And why they might be different. If you're talking to a high anxiety generalist, people who are afraid of things like affording necessities, economic depression, their kids growing up in a worse America, so they kind of cross over with the other group, you need to be asking questions about, are tariffs, for example, benefiting you? Oh, you work in agriculture. Have you seen that USAID being suspended is going to cost Wisconsin farmers upwards of $150 million in cheese that won't be bought, right? Mm. You need to focus, if you're talking to a political chaos warrior, people who would be far more likely to vote for Harris, almost 70% of them, about things like corrupt or incompetent government officials or billionaires controlling government, because that's their fears.
So,
right?
So you and I can sit here and talk about this all day. And this is this, no. when Trigvy and I go across the state, oftentimes I just sit there as fascinated because you really do know this stuff and you dive down deep on it and you're obsessed, yep, in a good way. And I find it so fascinating. Let's step back for a second for people who aren't, yep, as obsessed as you and I are and kind of put this, yeah, in more, you know, common English terms. In all this research, Trigvy, give us, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 things at the most that you, the big takeaways from this, particularly, yeah, in Wisconsin. What are people really afraid of? And how can we talk and have thoughtful discussions with those folks?
So what are people afraid of is going to, and this is where people need to look at the data. That's going to vary depending on which of these 5 kinds of fears that people hold.
Are there any through lines, or are there things that are common, or no?
No, they're, you know, each of us comes at looking at the world differently, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit. And so the things we fear are going to be shaped by the events that we think that matter and our personal experiences. So if you're a guy who's our age and you remember the Cold War, you might be more shaped by those experiences than you would be by the pandemic. If you're a younger person and you never experienced 9/11 or the financial crisis, you're probably going to be more shaped by, you know, the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And what you went through. So the first rule of of having conversations with people is understanding it's not about you and what you think. It's about how they see the world.
Yeah.
And thinking in your mind when you're having a discussion with them that may not be going well, what is it that they really fear, and what are the things that shaped their understanding of the world? Because, and how do I ask questions about that that will help them see? The second thing that we are missing is you don't shame people out of their values,
mm-hmm.
right? So trying to present people with all kinds of facts isn't going to get them to change their opinions. In fact, it's going to make them more hold on deeper to their, well, the government is spending $8 million of my money on transgender mice, right?
Mm.
The way that you get to that is you ask them questions about things, right? None of us want waste, and you may want to admit that. I don't want waste, right? But doesn't that seem a little far-fetched, right? And you have to make it's all about coming back to them. And the things that we're releasing are about trying to get people to understand how to look at those that they're having conversations with and come at it from their perspective, not from their own perspective.
I've got a column coming out, I think, this week on Civic Media, and it's based on not this great research that you've done, but just on what you and I did the last year and a half. And I start out with the Yogi Berra quote. You know, you can observe a lot just by looking around. And it's so 100%. True, and that's what you and I found. And I think you're so right, spot on in this. Now you have the quantitative data to prove it. Is you have to, not you, but folks, myself included, we have to remember to look at things through the eyes of the people that we're in front of, whether that's at a bar mm-hmm. stool or at our kids' cross-country event or at a band concert or hiking, you know, in a state park. How do other people see things? And then, as you said, look, I'm somebody who left the Republican Party in 2011. I didn't leave because I was shamed into it. I left because I was witness to something that was untrue to the things that I believe. And I said, I can't be a part of that.
Right. I mean, you recall we were in the bar, I think at Stevens Point at one point, and I was having the conversation with the bartender who was trying to figure out how he wanted to vote. And if you remember when he was saying what he was thinking, I wasn't giving him facts or counter arguments to his decision that he was trying to make between Harris and Trump and his concerns about prices and what it meant for the bar and all of that. Remember, I was asking him questions that were about trying to get at what is the underlying concern mm-hmm. that he's really articulating. Because remember, people are going to talk in sound bites and things that they've heard. But what you have to do is you have to understand what is the real fear, what is the real thing that, and then be asking them questions. Well, does that really make sense? Is that how you apply in your own life to, you know, if they're concerned about immigration, but you know that they know somebody who's an immigrant who, you know, works for them and they like them, mm-hmm. you have to ask the questions about that. You need to make it personal.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy for those to make it about others. You have to make it about specifics.
We're going to put all this courtesy of Trigby and the Lincoln Democracy Institute on our socials so you can connect to it and read it for yourself. Come on back. We'll play a little What's Worse with Trigby after this. It's the All Balls Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Streaming TV is where it's at. It's not about cutting the cord anymore. It's all about your customized TV options. With the best and cheapest high-speed internet and your own TV subscriptions, we've got your dream TV lineup. Between wired and satellite internet and TV, save money and get more internet speed and better TV today by calling the Whole Home Connect.
800-217-9129. 800-217-9129. 800-217-9129.
online.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, the news is bad, but the discussion is great. We go to the Dom Salvia Show, along with guest and host in his own right, Earl Ingram, to discuss a potential looming recession due to the economic chaos of the Trump administration.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Jeff Spiels working the board with us today. Earl Ingram Jr. can check out his show, 8 to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Earl, thank you for doing so. Talking about the tariffs and the back and forth and what the impact may be. Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, very concerned. Concerned. Hell, I'm concerned. But, you know, actually, Ron Johnson could actually do something about it. All I can do is talk about it on the radio. But some of the headlines regarding this from the Washington Post, I'm not sure I'm going to quote them too much anymore given their circumstances. But in the meantime, Trump grants one-month tariff reprieve to some goods from Canada and Mexico. Well, this is some bouncing around. The pause on the tariff applies only to imports that comply with the free trade agreement between the United States, Canada, and Mexico signed in late 2018. That was the one he renegotiated that he's reneging on right now. About 62% of goods from Canada and 50% from Mexico will still face tariffs implemented this week, White House official told reporters on Thursday. CNN reporting on this as well. The rocky week on Wall Street continued on Thursday as investors grappled with further uncertainty from President Donald Trump's tariffs. U.S. stocks opened sharply lower but fluctuated on the mixed messaging coming from the White House. Uncertainty, mixed messaging, you know, just what Wall Street loves. All three major indices closed lower despite Trump announcing a nearly one-month tariff delay. Earlier in the day, U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick told CNBC that the president would likely announce a one-month tariff delay on products. The bouncing back and forth, the uncertainty, the Dow closed lower by 428 points, almost 1%. The broader S&P 500 fell 1.78%, and the NASDAQ composite slid 2.61%. NASDAQ closed almost in correction territory, down nearly 10% from its most recent peak on February 3rd. Now, we do have one cut from Donald Trump on the markets. Well, what does Trump have to say about the markets today, Jess? Would you play that one, please?
Nothing to do with the market. I'm not even looking at the market because long term, the United States will be very strong with what's happening here.
Long term, we're all dead, Earl, as I said. He said he's not even looking. Now, my understanding, this guy hasn't divested. You don't think that people around him are getting whiff of what's coming or what's going on and might trade on that kind of action? Because he hasn't divested from anything. I don't trust this guy in anything. When he says he's not watching the market, and you know this guy, Earl, he's a billionaire. He always watches the market.
You know, Dominic, I have a brilliant gentleman on with me on Fridays. His name is Sandy Williams.
Yeah.
Graduated cum laude from Harvard many years ago. He's an economist. He dealt with Enron. And so what Sandy said to me, and I've been with Sandy for about 4 years. Sandy, every time I would say a recession is coming, Sandy would say no. And Sandy, even in the face of when many other economists, nationally known economists, said the recession is coming, Sandy said, it's not. And Sandy has been correct every time. Sandy told me yesterday, Dominic, recession is coming. Now, it hasn't been one since 2007. And so Sandy predicting that is, man, the pain and the damage with a man like Donald Trump who doesn't know blank from Shinola, you know, and the pain that people are going to feel. And Sandy used to always tell me about the tools that they could use, the Federal Reserve, to mitigate the pain of the recessions. He said those things are already, you know, gone by the wayside. And he's projecting a horrible, horrible recession, Dominic, at the same time that they're doing away with the safety nets, Dominic.
Right, right.
Can you imagine?
And why are they doing away with the safety nets? What is the reason for that? Of course, because they have to somehow fund the tax cuts at $4.5 trillion that were not made permanent when they were passed. They're set to sunset, and they're going to sunset the end of this year. And they are doing everything they possibly can to try to somehow balance it out so they can get those tax cuts, $4.5 trillion. And there's no way, there's zero chance of that happening unless they cut Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, those kinds of things. That's where.
Or the military budget.
Or the military budget. Well, they're not doing that, man. 855-752-4842. Who's your Bob? You are up. Welcome to the show. We've got Earl and Jess with us. What do you got for us?
We're, all of us except Jess, are old enough to remember back in the 40s, 50s, it was a cartoon. And Three Stooges staple. They would attach a dollar bill to a string, put it on the street.
Yeah.
And then when some sucker came by to grab it, they'd snatch it away. Yeah. And he would follow them down the street trying to get that elusive dollar. Well, there's your Republican Party.
That's terrible, Bob. I mean, they're chasing the dollar. Thanks for the call, Earl. They're chasing the dollars. And of course, a lot of the folks that have voted for MAGA, you know, when they get to be their billionaire, they don't want to have to pay those kinds of taxes. Of course, that's never happening. You're not going to be a billionaire no matter how hard you try. That ain't happening. So the fact that the MAGA voters are the ones supporting with all their heart, you know, these billionaires, I think they're going to be what? Taken care of? When they're dismantling the very safety net that would take care of them, especially with a recession right on the horizon, potentially.
You know, man, it, you know, as much as it hurts to know that people are going to be hurting terribly, the elderly, children, because of this, and part of me says the MAGA people deserve what they get. But they don't get it alone, Dominic.
Yeah.
We all get it, right?
Yeah.
We all get it.
We all get it. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvi Show. That is Earl Ingram joining me today. You can check his fine program out right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 8 to 10 a.m. Going to come back with more of your calls, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. The Dow currently down almost 3% on the week. The market is in the red during President Trump's presidency, in part because of the uncertainty that Trump's trade policies has caused. NASDAQ has fallen by more than 7% since Trump took office. The S&P 500 down more than 4%. Come back with us.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Trump's threatening to put massive tariffs on dairy products and lumber goods from Canada as soon as tomorrow.
And while Trump has said it was reciprocal for tariffs imposed by Canada on U.S. goods, his top economic aide, Kevin Hassett, giving a different reason today on ABC's This Week.
What happened was that we launched a drug war, not a trade war, and it was part of a negotiation to get Canada and Mexico to stop shipping fentanyl across our borders.
Another potential government shutdown looms. Speaker Johnson's latest short-term spending bill can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote already. At least two have said they're a no. It's been 60 years since Bloody Sunday, when police in Alabama beat protesters in Selma. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries was there today.
We stand on the shoulders of those giants right now, still having to carry a heavy burden to perfect our country and perfect our democracy.
This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
It's the Bucks and the Cavaliers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks host the Cavaliers, the number one team in the NBA's Eastern Conference, 7 o'clock tonight. Now, last night, the Bucks losing to the Orlando Magic in five-serve form, 111-109. That snapped a four-game Bucks winning streak. College basketball, it was Marquette's senior day. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur in attendance. But the Golden Eagles let an eight-point lead slip away, and they lost to number sixth-ranked St. John's, 86-84. Marquette head coach Shaka Smart.
You know, credit to St. John's, they stayed tough. You know, when you have that type of momentum, you have to keep it going.
In Madison, the Badgers losing at home to Penn State, 86-75. Wisconsin center Stephen Crowell.
I think, like Coach said in the locker room, just the bite wasn't there necessarily. Like he said, to end the first half, then all the way through the second half. I just think we didn't have enough grit, enough bite in that second half, and credit to them for taking it to us.
That's the Badger Stephen Crowell with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, mostly clear and lows in the low 30s. Sunshine, 66 for Monday. Winds will be out of the south, up to 25 miles per hour. Winds increase to 35 miles per hour Monday night with a low near 25. Sunny and 41 on Tuesday.
Currently, 53 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In a brief to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, a bipartisan group of former county election directors urged the court to reject a claim that as many as 65,000 voters were ineligible last November. And a former state Supreme Court justice is arguing in another appeals case that gerrymandering by the state legislature is akin to stuffing the ballot box. We followed the claims from state Supreme Court candidate Jefferson Griffin that as many as 65,000 registered eligible voters had incomplete registrations in a race he lost by 734 votes to incumbent Justice Allison Riggs. The race is the only unresolved election in the country. In late February, a bipartisan group of 42 former county election directors filed a brief outlining why the voters should be considered valid and concluding, "The citizens of North Carolina who obey the laws and the direction of the elections administrators should not have their votes discarded." In another North Carolina case, former state Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr is arguing in state appeals court that the legislature's gerrymandered voting districts manipulate election outcomes. By packing voters by party into a district, he argues, it violates the state constitution's guarantee of free elections with a fair count. Orr told the Charlotte News and Observer, if they can't stuff the ballot box, how can they stuff the voter pool? We have more on both cases at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Can our NATO allies continue to rely on the United States under President Trump? What is your take, Professor Barrington?
The conversation had been going into Friday. Can Europe just get a seat at the table for these negotiations? The right question now is, can Europe build a new table?
Mm.
And I think that's where they are. February 28th, 2025 is going to be remembered as, a pretty key date.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pat Kreitlow.
I'm practicing my quiet voice because Monday is my wife's birthday and she's sleeping in. One of the occupational hazards of trying to do a radio show from home.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight. We go to the Maggie Dawn Show up next, along with Maggie's co-host for the day, Tom Palisiewicz. They talk constitutional law, with a conservative caller from Superior, Jeff, who explains why he believes that Trump has the right to change laws. Turns out, the Constitution, as Jeff believes, does not give him that right.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. Happy Friday Eve. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this afternoon by my special guest co-host who joins me every Thursday. He's Tom Paulswitz. We're having a discussion about Donald Trump, the whiplash president. What's your favorite flip-flop? I mean, it's only been, what, like 6 weeks? There's so many flip-flops. Right. We've got a lot of great callers and texters. You can join our discussion, 855-752-4842. What's your great cognitive dissonance where Donald Trump says, I love farmers, but I'm going to put these tariffs on that are going to devastate family farms. Yes. I'm going to gut the USDA and crush small farms in Wisconsin. What's your favorite contradiction? There are so very many. 855-752-4842. I love the middle class, but here's tax cuts for billionaires and the world's wealthiest corporations. I can't
tax
make it make
will
sense.
Pay for themselves.
Right. They don't.
Right. We all know.
We're all big deficit hawks, and we need to worry about this because our country's going to go bankrupt. But I will strip the employees of the IRS who generate way more income than they cost by ensuring that rich people actually pay what they owe. We'll have the lowest effective tax rate in two generations. And make it make sense. 855-752-4842. Wanted to bring back our friend Jeff from Superior, a fine gentleman having a great discussion with Tom and I this afternoon. Jeff, you said you're a defender of the Constitution. You believe in the separation of powers in Articles 1, 2, and 3. So, Jeff, what do you think about what is, by any, I think, good faith estimation, an incredible power grab by this president?
Well, my favorite quote from Ronald Reagan is, the purpose of government is to protect us from each other. And I think he, as an executive, chief executive, as president, he's right on. He's got his finger on the button of what should motivate us as a country with regard to our separation of powers. My favorite quote from FDR is, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I think when a person is president of the United States, you're the point guard of our government. And the judicial branch and legislative branch takes, you know, takes their direction from a chief executive. And this
but that's not actually true. Jeff, that's not actually true. The legislature determines how we spend money, which many of us would argue is the real power of government. Yes. It is in how we decide to expend our revenues. That is not a presidential power. That is an Article I power. Full stop.
Yep, in the Constitution. So, Jeff, what you're saying is you're okay with President Trump overstepping his constitutional authority because you agree with what he's doing.
Well, he has a responsibility to put fiscal responsibility on the table.
That's not the question, Jeff. The question is are you good with him overstepping his constitutional authority because you agree with what he's doing?
Well, was it appropriate for Biden not to enforce
that? We're not talking about President Biden. We're talking about President Trump right now, this minute. Do you agree that it's okay for him to overstep his constitutional authority, being a constitutional person yourself, because you agree with what he's doing?
I think what he's doing is within his constitutional authority.
But that's not true. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the court.
I mean, Jeff, hang on a second. Court after court after court after court, including the Supreme Court this week, have said he's not acting within his constitutional authority.
Okay, so who enforces the law?
The executive branch. But the executive branch does not get to decide the law.
Yes.
Okay, so it's okay for Biden to...
My point is that a president, his first oath is to defend the Constitution and the law. Courts will find that a president unintentionally violated the law or exceeded their authority. This president is saying, you can't check me. He has tweeted this. If I declare it to be, it is legal. That is what the man tweeted. That's not what the Constitution says. So I'm going to return to Tom's question. Are you okay with a president intentionally breaking the law, intentionally exceeding his constitutional authority because you agree with what he's doing?
Well, he has the right to free speech.
But, Jeff, come on now. All right, we got to move on.
We're going to take that as a yes.
This, yeah. From just a few moments ago, a federal judge has ordered reinstatement of NLRB board member Gwen Wilcox and said this about Trump. He fundamentally misapprehends his role under Article 2 of the Constitution. The judge continued, quote, a president who touts an image of himself as a king or dictator, perhaps as his vision of effective leadership, fundamentally misapprehends his role. Exactly what Jeff just said, per a federal court judge, is a fundamental misapprehension of our Constitution. Wow. There you have it. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Whistler, who's been very patient from Richland Center. Thank you for your patience, sir or ma'am. And please say hello to Tom. Whistler, you there?
Well, I'm here.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm here. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
Hi, Maggie. First of all, it's W-I-S-L-A-R, not W-I-Z-Z-L-A-R. Anyway, whatever. I'm standing here looking at a certificate of appreciation signed by President Nixon for my service in the military. But anyway, this whole thing with Trump and what's happening to us veterans and us Americans are people. People are being interfered with in their daily lives, and it hurts. I have... you know who John Lithgow is?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
John Lithgow wrote 3 books about Trump. Well, you know, you have to read Adam Jason Moon, another veteran from the Iraqi wars, the warrior's thought.
Yeah, I think looking to some of the people who have served this country and who are writing about Donald Trump, those are voices we want to elevate, like the gentleman we just had on. We had a little bit of a hard time hearing you, sir, so I apologize for that. Folks, you want to join my conversation with Tom Paulswitz, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I want to take an angry texter, a conservative texting in. You are ignorant communist who only bring this stuff up when it serves you. All the liberal judges overstepping their boundaries and circumventing the law. Again, it seems to me that we call judges activists only when we disagree with what they're doing. Was it not judicial activism for the Supreme Court to overturn a case that had stood for nearly 50 years protecting a woman's right to control her body? Is that not judicial activism? Sir, I refer you to the work of Stephen Vladek. He is a law professor at Georgetown. He will tell you that in his analysis, this Supreme Court, since Donald Trump's last appointees were put on the court, has taken more power than any other Supreme Court in the entire history of the country. Check it out. That's an activist court. If you want to criticize liberal judges, then let's criticize the Supreme Court for those same things.
Also, another really good point, Maggie.
Please.
We're not communists.
Yeah.
We're not communists.
Thank you.
Just wanted to make sure that's known.
Cornell from Merrill, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Please say hello to Tom. What's your question or comment this afternoon?
Let me get time. Well, I'm a Vietnam era veteran, and I've had excellent care at the Wostok Clinic. They cured my skin cancer. I had a bad fever. I had to go to the hospital. They cured that. And a month ago, I couldn't walk, and I had a bad foot ankle, and they gave me a nice foot ankle brace, and it's just outstanding. I'm just quite upset that he's cutting the veterans, and I just hope that people will speak out and for that care. But what I'm upset with is I'm very upset with what Trump is doing. He's cutting off all aid from Ukraine, and
yes,
he's
sir.
Siding with Putin. And I strongly believe that we have a communist president. It's terrible.
Cornell, thanks so much for your service.
Thank you
for your call. I think, again, I marked last Friday as a day that will live in infamy. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's bear hug of an authoritarian dictator who assassinates political enemies, suppresses the free press, locks up political enemies, assassinates journalists, has stripped Russians of basic civil rights is an abomination, and it is completely antithetical to the most fundamental principles that we have told ourselves that we hold most yes. dear in this country. I think it will cost us all, not just because the world no longer considers us a beacon.
No.
But because it's going to end up costing us more from a taxpayer dollar perspective.
Right. These decisions are all short run, and they're all going to hurt in the long run, you know. But in addition to that, him wanting to now potentially deport the 250,000 Ukrainians that are here now.
Correct. Revoking their asylum status. Yep.
Him wanting to realign NATO to be if you've paid your dues, then you fall under protection. If you haven't paid your dues.
No protection for you.
We're not probably coming to your aid.
Our conservative friend on the text line says, just like Zelensky declared martial law to remain in power. Sir, I suggest you read up. Sir or ma'am, I suggest you read up. Ukrainian law stated if they are in an active yes. military war and conflict, elections are suspended. That is what the law said before Zelensky took office. He has a higher approval rating now than he did when he took office. Those
he
are
has also
facts.
Said he will step down if that's what it takes for the United States to continue to negotiate a fair and peaceful solution to this war.
A just peace, not peace at
a
any price,
peace.
A just
Correct.
Peace. And by the way, this person who continue, not true. Okay. I mean, either you're right or we're right. I suggest you read a little bit, like a Google or two might help here.
The facts are correct.
Right. There are actual yeah. observable facts. That was yes. the law before Zelensky took office. Also saying that we are communists. I would encourage you, friend, to give us a call. Give us a call. Let's define communism, and then Tom and I can talk about it.
I'd love to know why we're communists, because I'm pretty sure I'm not a communist.
Small business owner? I don't think
so. I run a business like that, yeah.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Ken Bob from Dailyville, you've been very patient. Go ahead, friend.
Hi. Thank you very much. It's a great show. Earlier, you were talking about the whole nonsense with the tariffs not making any sense. And it makes sense in one way, insider trading. He's
yes.
making the market mm-hmm. just
yes.
turn. And his
yes.
buddies are getting the word of when he's going to act sane about the tariffs. Yep. So then they can buy up and before that. And then the prices go back up and they sell. That's the old book. Jay Gould was an expert at it.
Ken Bob, we hadn't gotten into like the meat, the substance of the tariff discussion because our text and phone line so hot this afternoon. Right. But I was going to make that exact point. Folks that short stocks, buy futures, right. et cetera, you tip a few people off. There are right. billions to be made with all of the chaos that Donald Trump can make at the drop of a hat, at
but
whim.
But Maggie, I'm pretty sure the SEC will catch those people, won't they?
Well, not if it's stocked with a bunch of loyalists, right? Not
or not stocked at all.
Right. Or just completely, like shutting down the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has saved and returned right. over $12 billion to American consumers. Get rid of that. We don't need that.
Corruption. We should be looking more at corruption than anything else at this point.
Folks, that's Tom Pauls. What's my name's Maggie Dawn. We're going to take your final thoughts and comments. I can't believe we're already here. It's the last segment of this Friday Eve show. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Keep it locked.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Governor Tony Evers has released his budget, calling this the most pro-kid budget in state history. This is now the fourth time that Evers has put forth a budget proposal, and the three prior were all met with a similar fate. Republicans in the legislature rejected it entirely. Again this year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the budget dead on arrival. To a certain extent, this is what we've come to expect from this era of divided government in Wisconsin. In previous years, Evers has eventually signed Republican-authored budgets and used his line-item veto powers to make certain changes. But could he play hardball this time around and threaten to veto the entire budget? Is there anything in this pro-kid budget that has to be there? Things like education funding, or clean water protections, or Medicaid expansion? With everything going on in Washington, now might be the right time for Evers to fight for these proposals and fight for Wisconsinites in any way he can.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wrapping up hour one of this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. The Schwabinator this week welcomed on Matt Muller, a Milwaukee film critic, to talk about the Oscars.
Joining us now on the program, as he so often does, our friend Matt Miller. He's a Milwaukee film critic who does great work and is always a joy to read. You can check out his Substack at A Man About Film. Check out his work. He does good stuff there. And he joins us now over the stream on Nightlight. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing fantastic. A little tired. I'm still waiting for Adrian Brody's speech to end.
We've chopped it up. We're getting through it. It's a mini-series here tonight.
I think it's officially by 1 second the longest speech in the history of the Academy
Awards. Is that true?
Which takes some doing.
Wow.
So good work, Adrian Brody. And the funny thing is, it's not like he had a lot of meaningful things to say either. We got to the end of that speech and we were like, the guy's trying to, you know, make peace in the Middle East. We're able to wrap it up faster than
God,
you.
No kidding. Nuts. Yeah, he needed it an envoy. Nuts. Yeah, it was strange because it was meandering. It's like, really? Like, and then he tells them to stop the music. I got to get through this. And like, he's a second time Oscar winner. That's probably what gave him the street cred to have them do that. But come on, dude.
Well, and like, you'd think when he was shushing the orchestra, it was like, oh, here's where he has like the heartfelt tribute to his parents or something. And instead, it was just more rambling. It was one of the most bizarre parts of the night. And there was a random Wiz tribute in the middle of the night. So it was a fun night, but that was not one of the highlights.
All right, before we get hardcore into this deep dive, I came down to the wire. The only film I was unable to see was I'm Still Here. I just don't live in an area where they showed it, and it's not available
to
stream.
Yeah, that was a late release. That one just came out just a few weeks ago. Yeah,
yeah. But I did see Nickel Boys, and I did see The Brutalist. I wasn't a fan of The Brutalist. I love the story of Nickel Boys, but I thought the techniques they used, breaking the fourth wall and kind of how they told the story, took me out of it a little bit. I know some people love it. What is your take on those two films, Matt?
Yeah, I love Nickel Boys. Would have been, if I was a person with a ballot, Nickel Boys would have been my best picture.
Nice.
I do get the kind of hesitance people have toward that movie. For people who don't know, it's a movie about two young black boys in a reform school, in a abusive, horrific reform school in Florida in the 1960s, based on the Colson Whitehead novel. And it's all told in first person mode. It is all told from the perspective of its two characters. And I think that works really well in that movie. I think it especially serves as a gut punch when you see when they're older, you see that the camera is not first person. It is dissociated. It is seen from their backside. I think it's a very moving, emotionally well-told movie. But I understand it is a very strange movie. Like I said, a lot of technical craft is getting involved in that film, and it can be distancing for some people. For me, it was more immersive. I'm amazed it got the Best Picture nomination over the likes of Sing Sing, which is a little bit more conventionally uplifting and interesting and kind of conventionally emotional. So I was happy. The nomination was the win there, and I respect The Brutalist. I think it's a mammoth production that they pulled that movie off. But for a 3.5 hour long movie, I really want to like feel that movie and really come away being amazed. And the back half of that movie just doesn't come together for me in a way that I really walked out satisfied. But I can't not appreciate everything that went into making that movie. It's one maybe I respect more than I really love. Well, and I think that's why it didn't win much last night, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, other than Adrian Brody and Best Score, I think Brutalist was otherwise pretty much held out.
And in a weird way, and that's a great way to put it, I respect it too. And Adrian Brody was great. I just felt like it would have had a better chance if it were a true story. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like kind of it was like, wait, now this guy's doing this, and now... I don't know. It just did not resonate with me, but it looked great. Adrian Brody was, all the actors were great. Felicity Jones was great.
I will say I like that it's not a true story. Like, if you remember 3 years ago, there was that weird thing with Tar, the Cate Blanchett movie, where people were like, oh, is this a biopic? And everyone was like, no, this is a completely made up character. And that's what I had with The Brutalist, where I walked out and I was like, I got to read more about this architect. And then it was like, oh, he's not a real person. Right. But I think that speaks to the writing of that movie, that he feels so real in a lot. And the story feels so tangible. I think that's maybe the most impressive thing about the movie, is that it feels like it should be based on a real person, or at least that this is a true story that actually is, for the most part, just inspired by an architect as opposed to being truly a biography.
Right. And it's hard to argue with his win. Before we get into the awards, Matt, what did you think of the broadcast itself, the Oscars?
I thought it was a really good show. Yeah, I thought Conan O'Brien, this has got to be the first time in my lifetime that someone has hosted the Oscars and gotten rave reviews.
Yeah.
Normally, hosting the Oscars is the most hated job in Hollywood. You know, it's a no-win scenario. Everyone thinks you did a bad job. The room is, you know, awkward. Conan killed it. I think he did a very good job balancing, making fun of the room, making fun of himself. When it got to the why are we gathered here when the world is a mess portion of the night, I thought he delivered that really sincerely and well. I thought he did a good job of, I liked the pomp and circumstance of the show. I liked the kind of, we're going to do a 10 minute, you know, tribute to James Bond for no real reason.
What was that? That was crazy.
If Amazon didn't buy the rights to Bond and that franchise is doomed to become a shell of itself and MCU'd to death, I think I'd be more upset about that, but I appreciated it. Do you know the John Mulaney joke about making a birthday sign where it's like you start and you do a big old B and a big old I and a smaller R and you realize you're running out of room on the sign? Yeah. That's how last night's show kind of felt, where it was like in the beginning of the night, they really let people take their time and luxuriate. You got these really fun speeches and emotional moments. And then as the night got on, clearly ABC was like, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So more people started getting played off. And, you know, it seemed like things were really kind of rushing to get to the end. But I thought it was a good show. I'm sure the ratings aren't going to be great. I don't think this was a show people were like, you know, oh, I got to see what's going on here. And we have to acknowledge that, you know, these kind of shows are becoming more niche entertainment as opposed to general public entertainment.
Right.
That's fine. That is the way culture is going right now. But I thought it was a good show. And I think if the Oscars were smart, they should be like, Conan, here's a 10-year contract.
Yeah.
Keep doing this. You did great.
Let's pick up there when we come back after a very short break. Matt Miller is here helping us break down the Oscars. We'll get into some of the other awards when we come back. And then Mark Hansen is here at 7:35, the musical theater chair at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. You won't want to miss that as well. It's Peach Wabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Peach Wabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programs, Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Dom Selvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, will discuss the American crisis. Also, if the GOP has a mandate, shouldn't they be able to pass a stopgap spending bill without Democratic help? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Israel today applying more pressure on Hamas to release more hostages and delay the second phase of ceasefire talks.
Israel says it's cutting off its electricity supply to Gaza, and we must remember Gazans actually haven't had access to electricity from Israel since the beginning of the war. However, this will affect the desalination plants, which provide clean drinking water, and this could have a huge impact on Gazans.
ABC's Lama Asa. Hamas brushing it off, saying they've been on generators since the start of the war, vowing to release hostages only with the conclusion of a new peace agreement. A stopgap measure floated by House Speaker Mike Johnson to avoid government shutdown. Unclear if enough fellow Republican lawmakers will get on board. Johnson can likely only afford to lose one Republican vote, and already